here with us for the morning show as we talk about the convergence of the pandemic surging, the reopening of schools, and the flu season upon us. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Dr. Howard Koh was serving in the Obama administration when the H1N1 flu virus was detected in the U.S. We're exploring lessons learned from 2009 and the federal government's approach to fighting the coronavirus pandemic today. Here in Wisconsin, there are 81,760 confirmed positive cases of COVID, 1,168 deaths. What do you think of the strategy for reopening schools, businesses, other parts of our economy? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Howard Koh is a professor at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and former Department of Health and Human Services Assistant Secretary. Dr. Koh, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's start with the reopening of schools. Their school is underway here in Wisconsin. We've also just, you know, had word in the recent day that UW-Madison is having student undergrads shelter in place. What kinds of federal guidance is needed from the federal level to ensure students and staff can return safely to wherever they go to school?
Well, Kate, we're into month 8 and counting in this pandemic response. And through it all, we have underestimated the tenacity of this virus and overestimated our capacity to control it. I think at every step, with every challenge that we're facing as a society, Kate, we need to be very humble, very cautious, maximize and be as aggressive as possible on public health, and then also keep communication really high. So all those themes apply to school and college reopening right now. We're seeing this across the country. Everybody wants schools and colleges to reopen, but this is still a very tenuous time. Some of the trends you have reviewed already in Wisconsin are ones that we're seeing from coast to coast. And so we need the best national strategy possible. Unfortunately, Kate, we have not had that national strategy to date. We've had 50 states going in 50 different directions. We've had what I call rolling thunder of the pandemic across the country, first in the Northeast, then in the South, and now in the Heartland. So we need to be very careful and cautious as we go forward.
Well, when you say things like be humble, be cautious, improve, have high communication, are you talking at the state level, at the community level, or how do different levels of government work to combat this pandemic together?
Well, we need that communication at all levels, particularly in a crisis like this. I know we're going to be talking a little bit about 2009 when I had the honor of serving as Assistant Secretary for Health, but that was a time where we had, as challenging as it was, a one government approach, federal, state, local leaders all working together. Any health crisis, particularly an infectious disease crisis like this, challenges everybody, and we need to be on the same team with a unified strategy. We don't have that right now, and so that's what's making some of these challenges even tougher.
Well, do some contrasting, if you will, for us. What are the key differences between the flu pandemic and this coronavirus pandemic today?
Well, we can make some general comparisons. Of course, we have to remember that H1N1 was not as dangerous and not as deadly as this SARS-CoV-2 virus right now. Also, we had a vaccine in the pipeline when H1N1 arrived, so there was much more attention to distributing the vaccine, the new vaccine, as opposed to maximizing testing and contact tracing as we're doing now. But through it all, we had a unified approach and a focus on science and data. I'll give you one example, Kate. From the very beginning, we had regular press briefings for the nation and for states. Those were led by public health officials, highly respected top officials in government. Right now, with coronavirus, since the president declared a national emergency in March, we have seen, unfortunately, consistent inconsistency in health messaging about masks and testing and other key issues, and that's really hindered our national response so far. So as we approach the flu season this fall and a possible COVID vaccine gets approved and distributed, we need to maximize that high-quality health communication for the most trusted officials and move together as one nation.
We're going to talk about the path to a vaccine here in a moment, but I want to bring in Troy first in Muskego. Hi, Troy. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are this comes from the top down from the president, and I'm going to explain to you why real quick. You know, when it first came out and everybody had to be quarantined in the house or try to a stay-at-home order, actually the numbers went down. And it's really interesting that it's just like all these people that support Trump, they think it's a hoax. And because they do, they're not social distancing, they're not wearing masks. What ends up happening is the numbers only go down because of the people that are actually practicing social distancing and wearing a mask. And then all of a sudden it's like the numbers go back up again because these the ones that are not wearing a mask are spreading it around. And the whole and when the numbers go down, it's because the people that are social distancing and wearing a mask, and then the ones that don't call it a hoax. And they say, see, you know, it's like, no, it's because you're not social distancing.
And Troy, I'm going to have Dr. Koh here respond to you about the politicization of mask wearing, social distancing, about the reopening of economies. It's become quite political. Public health has, Dr. Koh.
So Troy raises some very important points. You know, we have to remember that right now, the best tools we have are public health interventions. Avoiding large crowds, hand hygiene, masks, and very important themes like that. In March and April, when the country closed down for a while, we did see the cases and deaths start to go down, as Troy pointed out. So public health works. Public health saves lives. But we reopened too early. The cases have gone way up, although they're now coming down in the last number of weeks. Kate, I'd like to make the analogy that as a nation, we're running down a rising escalator of disease, and we are far behind what other countries have done, both in Asia and in Europe and elsewhere, in getting to the other side of this pandemic. So as we move forward, we have to maximize our efforts in public health on social distancing, on universal mask wearing until a vaccine arrives.
We're talking with Dr. Howard Koh, who is a Harvard public health expert. You can join in. Do you think an all-encompassing national strategy would be able to help combat COVID-19? Join in with your thoughts on how the state, how our nation, and the world is fighting this pandemic. Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Koh, there is a massive worldwide rush to find a vaccine for COVID. What do you see in first in the collaboration of scientists around the world, but also how the U.S. is approaching the development of vaccines?
Well, there's so much to say about that, Kate. First, I want to express my gratitude for all the scientists and researchers who are working around the clock to give us a safe and effective vaccine, and those are professionals not only in the U.S., but around the world. We need a safe and effective vaccine approved as soon as possible. But we are also concerned that there are assurances that this may come the next number of weeks, even before Election Day. The president has made such announcements when his top officials actually disagree with that projection. The best projections from experts like Dr. Fauci and others that we may have a safe and effective vaccine by the end of this year or sometime early next year. What concerns me, Kate, right now is there is increasing mistrust and an increasing lack of confidence about any potential COVID vaccine on the horizon because there have been so many mixed messages about timing and safety and effectiveness. So we have to let the well-prescribed, the well-followed FDA approval process take its course. We cannot approve a vaccine for our country and for people around the world unless it's met the highest possible rigorous standards. And then we need trust and confidence in the vaccine to be as high as possible if we're going to eradicate this pandemic here and abroad. And Kate, also, we're having this conversation with flu season now already upon us. So we need this fall's flu vaccination campaign to be a major success and show everybody that prevention works, not just for flu, but for COVID and beyond.
Well, when you talk about the flu season that is coming up here and getting a flu vaccine, you know, to be honest, there are some years they say that the vaccine works well, other years not so well. You know, how do you approach that mindset when people are also going to have to approach getting a vaccine perhaps in the future for COVID-19?
So no vaccine is perfect. No vaccine works 100% of the time. But for flu vaccines, and I've been very involved in that process in my previous federal role, and also as a former state health commissioner, so I've lived through this many times, those vaccines aren't approved and recommended unless it's better to have it than not to have it. So we need vaccines to be as safe and effective as possible for flu and also for COVID in the future. And then when they're distributed, we need trust and confidence to be high, because that is prevention that can save lives.
Do you see that this season will be different in terms of the flu? Will people go out and get those flu shots based on what they have seen because of the pandemic?
Oh, that's a great question. You could argue that because of the pandemic, people are more interested in vaccinations in general. But on the other side, because of the trust and confidence issues that we've already discussed, there is a lot of hesitation as well. And just to complicate this more, Kate, it'll be tougher for businesses and schools and workplaces to host vaccination efforts because of the disruption from the pandemic. So this fall, for the flu season, we need everybody involved, every community leader, everyone to promote flu vaccination and get those numbers well over the 45% that we saw last year. And then that could give us the momentum to get ready for the COVID vaccine in the future.
Harvard public health researcher Dr. Howard Koh is our guide to the pandemic, how to quell the virus, what policies he wants to see at the federal level. What do you want to see as other states combat COVID that you want to see implemented here in Wisconsin or adopted here? If you're a parent or teacher, how do you feel about the delivery of fall coursework? What do you want from your school in terms of communication about the pandemic? It's 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Dr. Howard Koh here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Howard Koh. He's a professor of public health leadership at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, and he's been advocating for a national unified strategy on testing, on contact tracing, on the allocation of PPE, personal protective equipment. He served as Assistant Secretary of Health during the H1N1 flu pandemic. Let's take a call now. Andrew is joining us from Whitewater. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well. Go ahead.
So one question I had was regarding trust in the numbers and cases and deaths. I wanted to ask the doctor, why is it that there's been multiple instances where a person may have tested positive for the virus or have been hospitalized or died months ago, but it gets reported months later and it's said that there's this many new cases or this many people testing positive? Why is it that there's kind of a lag in reporting of positive test cases that may be skewing the data and making people go, well, I don't know if I trust this?
Andrew, thank you. Is there a lag time here, Dr. Koh?
Yes, there is. But Andrew actually points to a broader issue here, and that is our public health system has been underfunded and overlooked for far too long. So some of my heroes in life are public health officials who are serving at the local and state and federal level, who are trying to do their best for disease prevention and health promotion, especially in a time like this. And when a crisis hits, we need the best data possible. We need it in real time. We need it web-based and accurate. And because our nation has just not invested in public health infrastructure and prevention for far too long, we are seeing these lags and these challenges with data and other issues like that. So when we get to the other side of this, we really need Congress to boost their investment in public health infrastructure and public health professionals who are willing to serve in a time like this. By the way, I had the great honor of serving with your health secretary, Andrea Palm, when I was at HHS in 2009. So I want to thank her for her dedication. And it's people like Secretary Palm and others around the country who are trying to get us through this crisis right now. And they need all the support they can get.
Let's bring in Rita now in Green Bay. Hi, Rita.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What an excellent day in Wisconsin. I just want to express how disappointed I am. And I heard last week or a week ago, a psychologist or a doctor, and then this morning, a call-in person say that someone not wearing a mask in public is guilty of spreading germs and viruses. That is a discredit to those who have, for anxiety reasons, autism, or COPD, they should not wear a mask. And now they're being accused of spreading germs. When I am in the public and I'm watching people with masks on, standing next to each other talking, or conversing with each other over great lengths of time, they don't realize how many germs and viruses they're passing. And those who cannot wear masks because of their health reasons are avoiding public spaces for days and days and days on end. Therefore, their sterility on spreading a virus has gone down so much, as opposed to those who are getting a false sense of security.
And Rita, let's have Dr. Koh respond to mask wearing and people who are unable to wear masks.
Well, thank you, Rita, for that very important question. You know, one of the great important scientific developments of this pandemic response is understanding how important mask wearing is for our society right now. Places like in Asia have understood the importance for decades because they encountered other coronaviruses in the past, like SARS in 2002 and 2003, and MERS in Korea in 2015. And then recently in Europe, masks have become the norm as well in response to the pandemic. Here in the U.S., mask wearing has taken hold to some degree, but still not required in some 15 states. Now, it's very important to have the exceptions that you noted, Rita, for people with medical conditions. And so that's acknowledged. And also, by the way, we don't expect kids under age 2 to wear them as well. But in general, if this can become the social norm, in the public health norm, it can save lives. There's a new projection from the University of Wisconsin that over 100,000 lives could be saved between now and the end of the year if mask wearing was universal. And we also like to point out that wearing masks gives you freedom. It boosts your freedom because it not only protects you to some degree, but it protects people around you, your friends, your family, the people you love. And so if you wear it in public and make that the norm, it can help us get businesses back on their feet, schools back on their feet, and hopefully return to some sense of normalcy.
Rita, thanks. We're discussing the national pandemic response with Harvard public health expert Dr. Howard Koh, taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Chuck in Chippewa Falls now. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking this call. I have been on a quest for information for many months now relative to the spread of the virus. And what I had found both at the county level and even more granular than that is that early on, no information was available to us because of HIPAA regulations. That's what we were told. Now that we have a much higher numbers of positive tests, it is available at the zip code level, but the data is available but not made public at the census tract level. And I would like to know which areas of our county that I should try to avoid for my shopping or other things, but the information just isn't available. So I was hoping your guests might comment on where are these restrictions originating from? Is it county? Is it state? Or is it federal? Or is it just common way of doing business?
Chuck, thank you. Yeah. Chuck, thanks. Drilling down on that data, and where are the transparency gridlocks, do you see, Dr. Koh?
Well, Chuck's question actually is related to the one that Andrew raised earlier about having the best data possible during a crisis. So there's no doubt that we have to be careful about personal information about individuals. That's always been a privacy principle that we try to uphold as a society. But in a time of crisis like this, we need the best aggregate data where we don't disclose people's personal information, but get good public health information at the county, state, and also federal level. So that's what we're trying to move toward. Again, we need an investment in public health infrastructure to get us to a much better place. It's been fascinating to see how investigators and researchers, some of my colleagues, are looking at cell phone data, for example, to assess social mobility and also tracking mask usage over time. These are all very important data trends that we need to finalize and support and make stronger as we go forward, because other threats are going to come again, and we need to be better prepared.
In our last moments here, Dr. Koh, I want to circle back to your vision of a unified national strategy and our response to the pandemic. If the federal government could take steps today, what would you want to see done? What changes must be done immediately to better stop the spread of this virus?
Okay, great final question. And if I can say, first and foremost, we need a sense that we have a united plan for the United States. We don't have that right now, and we are 8 months and counting into this pandemic response. We need the top public health officials like Dr. Fauci on TV every day telling us about trends and data and guidance, especially as flu season comes. We need the best coordination between a flu vaccination effort this fall and then a COVID vaccination effort that could come potentially by the end of this year or early next year. We need to test harder and also test smarter so that we are not always behind in trying to meet the demand for testing. We need to boost contact tracing and public health resources. And then if we do this together, we will have states collaborating with each other, helping each other, not competing with each other, as we've seen so often through this pandemic response, and send the message that we have a plan that's going to protect all Americans going forward.
Dr. Koh, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Kate. It was a pleasure.
Dr. Howard Koh is a professor at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.